Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Good afternoon and welcome to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. In this hour, we'll be talking with Michelle Exner, Senior Advisor for Parents Defending Education, who will be joining us to talk about how Washington does something right for parents with a TikTok ban. And then we'll be talking with a friend, Dr. Monica Miller, about her newest book, In the Beginning, Crucial Lessons from the Book of Genesis. Now, before we move on with today's program, I want to provide all of you an update on Al Cresta. Thank you all to everyone who has prayed for him and reached out to ask how he's doing. As Al has shared on the air, he's been dealing with phantom leg pain. It's a direct result of his 2003 amputation. Thanks to your prayers and his medical team, he has been making great progress, and a few months ago he began to learn to use a prosthesis. He's now facing a new health challenge. Around Easter, Al noticed he was struggling with persistent fatigue and other symptoms. He was admitted to the hospital for tests on April the 29th, and after a series of tests, it was discovered that Al has liver cancer. Al regrets that we have been unable to share anything until now, but he wanted to wait until we had concrete news. And now that we have that news, we are asking for your prayers. We invite you to follow the Caring Bridge page that Al's family has set up. This is where they will post updates, and you can send your prayers and encouragement to Al and his family. We have that page linked in our slider at avemariaradio.net. So you'll see a slider called News and Updates on Al Cresta, and if you click it, it takes you directly to the page. This is not the first time Al has faced a health challenge. In 2003, as you all know, he lost his leg to necrotizing fasciitis. And for the next 6 months, the family of Ave Maria Radio's listeners supported Al in prayer and buoyed him in his recovery. Our Ave Maria Radio family was strengthened by these challenges, and we are thankful for this opportunity to pray with our listeners again. Al is being treated by some of the best doctors in the world. He has placed his care in their hands and in the hands of the Lord, and he is determined in his recovery. So thank you for your continued prayers. Knowing that, just keep up the prayers and be assured of our prayers for you as well. And for now, let's take a look at the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, May 8th. It's the feast of the apparition of St. Michael the Archangel. Today's news brought to you by Visiting Angels, providing loving care and assistance for seniors in need at visitingangels.com. The U.S. has hit a pause on a large shipment of weapons for Israel over concerns about a large-scale military offensive in southern Gaza. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin telling lawmakers the move is to head off a full Israeli invasion of Rafah and to prevent civilian casualties as ceasefire negotiations continue.
Israel shouldn't launch a major attack in Rafah without accounting for and protecting the civilians that are in that battle space.
It's believed to be the first time that the U.S. has halted an arms shipment to Israel since its war with Hamas started. New York City Mayor Eric Adams will be meeting with Pope Francis as he travels to Italy later this week. Adams is leaving for Rome Thursday. He'll take part in what is called the World Meeting on Human Fraternity. The goal of the conference is to foster a better understanding of the major issues impacting the world. And the mayor will meet with the leader of the Catholic Church on the sidelines of the conference. Adams returns to New York City on Monday. Police in the Dallas suburb of Garland have arrested a Catholic priest on two counts of indecency with a child. Ricardo Reyes Mata is accused of making inappropriate contact with two minors when he made a visit to a residence. It was the church's officials within the Catholic Diocese of Dallas who alerted authorities. Mata remains in jail on bond. Former President Trump's classified documents case in Florida has been indefinitely postponed. The trial was set to begin in late May, but now will probably be delayed until after the election. Meanwhile, Trump's hush money trial in New York is in recess until tomorrow. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. President Biden recently signed legislation overwhelmingly passed by Congress, potentially banning TikTok in the United States. The bipartisan law imposes a nationwide ban on the app unless its Chinese parent company, ByteDance, divests completely within the next 9 months. Michelle Exner, Senior Advisor for Parents Defending Education, joins us with more. Michelle is a senior advisor at Parents Defending Education, and prior to joining PDE, she spent nearly 15 years managing press and communications at various levels of government and the private sector, including at the Office of the Speaker of the House, the U.S. Senate, CBS News, and various Department of Defense organizations. Michelle began her career as an active duty Marine officer. She is the mother to a son and daughter who currently attend elementary school. And you can visit defendinged.org, defendinged, one word, .org, or follow her on Twitter at Michelle P. Exner for more information on the work she's doing. Michelle, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Margaret? Thanks for that very thorough introduction. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Well, it's good that our guests know not only your credentials, but also the work that you do. It's important to us that they be able to reach you to find out more. So, Michelle, I want to start by asking you, how elated are you by this?
Yeah, absolutely. Both as a mother and just as a professional working on this issue, mm-hmm. I think the divestment of TikTok from China is the right move, right? And it's not a ban. I don't want to call this a ban. TikTok can certainly continue in the United States, but it should be under American control. And I think the issue at heart here is two things, right? It's one, it's the foreign influence on this app, right? That's incredibly problematic that you have a foreign adversary of the United States that has essentially, there's evidence showing that they are able to collect data from American users, right? This is not a secret. It's well known. And also, the second biggest issue is what kind of content are they pushing to American users, particularly children, right? We've seen things like dangerous trends that have started on Twitter. We have seen just horrible misinformation, right? I mean, we've seen over the past couple of months the celebration of Hamas terrorists and even Osama bin Laden, which was the terrorist behind 9/11. And so these are all things manipulated by Twitter. And I think a lot of folks agree that it's probably because it's owned by China. And so I think separating that component from this will still allow the social media app to be used by users, but will be safer because of it.
Which is wonderful to hear, truly. So many people hearing this, the first thing that's going to come to mind is, well, it's a Chinese organization. What's wrong with it being run by the Chinese organization that created the software to begin with? But there are real security concerns at play here, as well as information concerns, information sharing concerns. So shed light on that whole thing for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's actually a national security law that passed in China, I believe it was 2021 or recently, that companies in China will now be forced to provide information that the Chinese Communist Party deems important to mm-hmm. their country, their national security. And so under that umbrella is ByteDance, the parent company of TikTok, right? Mm-hmm. So now within that, you have American users using this app. And so there is really nothing, at least from what we can tell, that is separating or preventing, right, the Chinese Communist Party, the Chinese government, from extracting information from American users, whether that be data collection from their phone, data collection from the apps that they're using. There are just a lot of unknowns out there. I've never downloaded TikTok. Don't plan to. I suppose if an American company or there's, I will reconsider. But at this point, I consider it too much of a national security liability to even sacrifice for just watching a couple videos. Right? That's mm-hmm. how I prefer to waste my time. So I think it will be safer for it, especially when you consider, I think, who's consuming this, right? Probably a lot of young impressionable Americans. And I think it's well beyond just watching some videos, right? You're talking about manipulating, potentially brainwashing, and it's happening not by, right? It's not happening by content that is freely being shared in an app. I think the concern here is that it's content that is being strategically pushed to us, right? Like, are the Chinese users having a different algorithm, right? Are there different content pushing to their users? I mean, is this just another form of warfare that the Chinese Communist Party is using against America? I wouldn't put it past them, right? I mean, we've seen them have spies across either academic institutions, different sectors of American society. So I don't think anyone would think that it's beyond the possibility that they would be using this as just another form of warfare.
Right.
And so, it's important for Americans to be aware of that it's not as simple as, well, I'm just using some videos, it's fun. It's more than that, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think, it's rare when Congress, particularly in this current political environment, actually work on something together. And the fact that it was such a bipartisan vote, both in the committee and then when it passed and it was ultimately signed by the president, I think that sends a huge signal that this is something that members' constituents are concerned about. This is something that members have responded by voting and reflecting what they're hearing back home. And so I think there is, Americans have that breathe a sigh of relief, particularly when it comes to parents.
Right. And I think people who engage in the platform, especially the younger they are, there really isn't a true concept of just how powerful the algorithms are in curating the kind of content that's being floated before your eyes and the kind of power play that entails, shaping the intellect of the next generation in a particular way. We know that some content is being throttled in China, especially the more nonsensical stuff, like the TikTok dances and whatnot, but they're widespread and rampant here. So one could really make an argument for a kind of attempt at forming the intellect of an entire generation a certain way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, what are Chinese students getting, right? Are they getting math problems that are being pushed at them, mm-hmm. right? Are they getting literature and things of more just deeper, intelligence factor there, as opposed to just, like you said, just the dance videos or the trends that, and some are dangerous, right? Some have actually caused the deaths of young Americans, right? And that's frightening as a parent and just as an American in this country. And so I think that's a huge factor, that it's not as simple. And again, look, I'm a parent now, but I remember being young and probably thinking like, oh, well, that won't affect me, or that's not something, I'm not going to be influenced by that. But if it's constantly something that you're surrounded by, right, you're just going to be, it's inevitable that you're going to be influenced by what you're seeing, right? And so I think, and then when that is happening, when the power player behind that happens to be an adversary of the United States, we should absolutely be on guard, and do something about it. A parent should absolutely be paying attention, to what apps their children are using, particularly when it comes to TikTok. And so, hopefully, again, this is a step in the right direction, to protect American youth.
Right, and I completely agree. So what are we seeing in terms of parental attitude towards especially TikTok as a platform in the United States at large? Because there seems to be, as you mentioned, a bipartisan vote, which means that there's a kind of census populi here that's speaking for this as well, that's encouraging this.
Yeah, I know. We at Parents of Funding Education, we have polling that shows that Americans are, one, incredibly, overwhelmingly concerned about just in general the social media use of that they're seeing with their children, and two, the foreign influence, right, that plays into this. And so I think that is something that Americans have kind of been in tune with. They've realized it, and they're starting to pay attention, right? I think it's the same as the school closures, where we started paying attention to what's being taught in classes. It's the same thing here, where I think there's been kind of an awakening of saying, wait a second, like, I can't, it's not, my child sitting there mindlessly looking at videos can lead to far more dangerous things, right? And I think Congress has done a good job at bringing in, real people, real humans with these stories, and unfortunately some of them are tragic, right, of people that have experienced this. I know there was one with a social media CEO a couple months ago of just, young people that have fallen victim to things that they've seen on social media. And certainly I think it's been a positive from parents and families. And I think to those that say this is a free speech issue, I think I don't think that's correct, right? I think when we're not protecting free speech from China trying to influence what we're hearing and seeing and thinking, right?
Right.
It certainly crosses the line if they're pushing us as content. Hopefully, I think, best case scenario is that it's owned by an American company, and then it is Americans that control the data that's on this platform. So hopefully that happens over the next couple months. I know there's a deadline, I believe, of 9 months or so, and so hopefully that happens.
Yep, and definitely looking forward to it. So
absolutely.
Aside from this particular issue that Nicole wrote about, just tell us briefly about a lot of the work that you guys are doing. So just shed some light on some of the work so that our listeners can get an idea.
Absolutely, yeah. So in general, we are there once to empower parents. So we're a resource. Please visit our website, defendinged.org. We are also there to expose. That's a big part of our mission, of our objective, is that if we see something, whether that's something that we file public information requests on, whether that's a tip that we're getting from parents, if there's something happening in classrooms that shouldn't be, right? If there's bad actors out there that are trying to take neutral classrooms away, right? We're there to expose it. We'll make sure that families either in that district or across the country know what's happening. The recent example was just one that happened earlier today, was that since October, Parents Defending Education have been advocating that the anti-Semitism we're not just seeing it in higher ed, right? It's happening much younger at the K-12 level. And so we have been advocating for a hearing on that, and it happened this morning in the subcommittee, the House Education and Workforce Committee in Congress. They had the witnesses testifying were the heads, the district leaders of Berkeley County, New York City, and then also Montgomery County in Maryland. And, they had to answer some tough questions about how, either their lack of accountability, their lack of oversight and leadership have led to, bad environments, particularly for their Jewish students.
Right. I completely agree. And it's so crucial that there are voices at the forefront, not only engaging these things, but understanding that it's weaponizing education that's becoming the problem. And so reclaiming right education becomes the solution.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for joining us, Michelle. My guest, Michelle Exner, Senior Advisor at Parents Defending Education. And you can follow her work at defendinged.org or on Twitter at Michelle P. Exner. I'm Marcus Peter for Cresta in the Afternoon.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Isn't it awesome that we today do not recognize his presence in the Eucharist? Is it because we really don't go to him in humbleness of heart and say, Lord, I don't believe, help my unbelief. Lord, I want to see you. I want to recognize you. I cannot live without you. Are we saying that?
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
What makes an act moral or immoral? The Catechism of the Catholic Church lays out specific criteria for us to follow. When he acts deliberately, man is, so to speak, the father of his acts. Acts freely chosen can be morally evaluated as either good or evil. The sources on which the morality of an act are determined are three. 1, the object chosen. 2, the intent of the act. 3, the circumstances surrounding the act. To be moral, the object of the act itself must be good and the intention pure. The circumstances are secondary to the first two criteria. They can increase or diminish the morality of the act. For instance, stealing a candy bar is wrong, but far less evil than robbing a bank. Intent and circumstance, however, cannot change the moral quality of the act itself. The end does not justify the means. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Acton University is not your typical conference. Taking place from June 24th to 27th in beautiful Grand Rapids, Michigan, each day is packed with thought-provoking presentations on the intellectual and practical foundations of a free society. Bringing together world leaders in business, academia, and the church, Acton University is a conference dedicated to connecting moral and religious principles to economic and personal liberty. More information at university.acton.org.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. My guest, a friend of the station, Dr. Monica Miller, and she's here to talk to us about her new book. The first three chapters of Genesis form the foundation for all that follows in salvation history. And without Genesis 1 to 3, one cannot properly settle into the biblical vision of reality. Genesis 1 to 3 places the human person in his cosmic setting and reveals his sacred origin, majesty, and wonder, as well as the flaw in his fallen human nature, his chronic rejection of God's wisdom. Humanity needs a savior, and from the start of Genesis, there is the promise that history has a meaningful direction. A savior is coming. And we discuss all of this with Dr. Monica Miller. This is about her book, In the Beginning, Crucial Lessons from the Book of Genesis. Dr. Monica Miller is a systematic theologian, director of Citizens for a Pro-Life Society, author of many books, including The Authority of Women in the Catholic Church, Abandoned, The Untold Story of the Abortion Wars, and Theology of the Passion of the Christ. Check out ProLifeSociety.com and this newest book published by Catholic Answers Press. Monica, how are you doing?
I'm good, and I'm excited about the book. Before we go there, though, we want to let listeners know about what's coming up next week regarding nine pro-lifers who are going to be facing sentencing in a federal court, the courtroom of Colleen Kohler Cotoli. They were convicted last August and September. They were tried in separate batches, right, in front of this judge for a rescue that they did at the Washington, D.C. Surge Center that's operated by the abortionist Cesar Santangelo, and he does abortions on demand through the ninth month of pregnancy. Yeah. So they did this rescue. They were charged with the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act. They expected that they would probably get charged with that federal law. They blocked the hallway leading to the place where the unborn are killed.
Right.
But literally unprecedented in the history of the pro-life movement. And I think it is because of the Biden administration, if I may say so, that an additional charge was brought by the Department of Civil Rights. Mm-hmm. And it was conspiracy to interfere with civil rights.
Right.
That has a 10-year maximum jail term and a $350,000 fine.
Right. And that was a curveball. That was not.
No one in a thousand years expected that people basically participating in a sit-in would be charged with that law.
Yeah.
And so they were convicted of that law and the FACE law. They've been in jail except for Paulette Harlow, who has a lot of very serious health issues. She was on house arrest, but they've been sitting in a Virginia jail waiting to be sentenced, and the sentencing is happening next week. So that would be starting on the 14th of May, 14th, the 15th, and then the 17th.
Yeah.
And I actually will be there. I'm going to be. I was at the trial. I've written articles about the trial that were in two articles in Crisis Magazine and one article in Catholic World Report.
Mm-hmm.
So prayers, many prayers are needed. And all this information is up on our website, Pro-Life Society, no hyphens, prolifesociety.com. And it's still, I think there's still time to write to this judge. If you put it on a two-day priority and mail it tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
I think 1,000 letters should be on top of her desk.
Right.
And that they have to be there by the 13th mm-hmm. of May.
Right. So the time shouldn't be wasted.
And right.
So for those of you listening, if you haven't written yet, consider having you and your family just have a writing party tonight and you know, compile a
dash off the letter. Yep. The address is on the website, prolifesociety.com, right on the homepage. All the information that you need is there.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Monica. And know that not only is Ave Maria Radio praying for these pro-life warriors, but we're convinced that our listeners are doing so as well. And
yes.
Yeah, we have to keep praying and working against this injustice. That's a difficult pivot, though, to
go from that to this.
The book, yes.
Okay.
but pivot we have to. So I want to ask you why you penned the Book of Genesis. And you can't say it was the result of my research working with you.
This book, I know this is going to sound outrageous in a way, but it's been in the works maybe 17 years. I've been thinking about it. I've been refining it. You would think it would be a longer book for, you know, 17 years in the making, but what I wanted to do was, I'm going to call it the most basic form of apologetics. I want to show the reader how it is, and if I dare say it, that Judeo-Christian religion is superior. Okay. And if you read the introduction, I start out by saying ideas matter.
Right, right, exactly.
What you believe, what you think matters. And so the point of it is how to demonstrate, again, I use the word the superiority of Judeo-Christian religion. What makes it superior in comparison with other world religions
mm-hmm.
is that it is the religious system that most defends and upholds human dignity,
mm-hmm.
the dignity of the human person. And what's really important is the goodness of the created order.
Right.
This world matters.
Right.
Okay.
Which you actually include, that matter matters.
Yes, matter matters. I also, of course, then you make the claim that of all religions, it is Catholicism that takes this world seriously.
Mm-hmm.
We worship through the world of matter.
Right.
We glorify God through the world that He's made. Religion is not about escape. Yeah. It's about using the good creation that God has filled with beauty, order, intention, meaning, and to build up the human person and to glorify God.
Right. And that's crucial because in reading your entire book, one of the things that you highlight, and I'm kind of jumping ahead here,
this
is in the beginning, but one of the things that you highlight is the sheer stark difference of the Judeo-Christian cosmogony compared to, and not just ancient cosmogony. Sure, you highlight the Babylonian, you talk about the Mesopotamian and Greek and Roman mythological heritages, but even in modern massive religions, right, the Islamic cosmogony is based completely on voluntarism. There's no goodness of God that translates into the goodness of creation, so it's completely arbitrary. The Hindu cosmogony is completely conflict-based, mirroring the Babylonian.
Right.
But then in the face of that, you've got the Judeo-Christian framework, that this whole thing is the result of love overflowing from God, and you highlight that, and it's actually breathtaking when you do.
Well, I wanted, the other thing I wanted to do in this book, an atheist could read this book, a non-believer could read this book to discover what difference does Judeo-Christian religion make.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing, how shall I put it? I'm not doing apologetics to prove the divinity of Jesus,
right,
or papal infallibility or apostolic succession or the resurrection of Jesus. I'm going down several steps below those particularities to show how the principal ideas that are embedded in the first three chapters of Genesis set the stage for this particular religion and why it matters. Mm-hmm. Okay, what are you going to get out of it? What difference does it make? I mean, so, you know, for example, I mean, I don't know if any of your listeners are familiar with the Babylonian creation story.
Oh, right.
Okay,
yes.
The Enuma Elish.
That's right.
Okay. But it's just so incredibly
bizarre.
Well, not only is it bizarre, but it's so pessimistic.
Mm.
The world is a consequence of violence.
Right.
It's a consequence of disorder. Mm-hmm. And the human being is a mere afterthought,
mm-hmm,
to take care of a dead goddess who was vanquished by the god of wind, mm-hmm, Marduk. The first chapter of Genesis is absolutely opposite.
Mm-hmm.
It matters, okay? Now, maybe you are a pessimist. I don't know. And maybe you think that the human being is just there to be the slave, right, of the cosmic order. Rather than what we see in Genesis chapter 1, the human being is made in the image and likeness of God and right, has a status and
dominion.
It? You know, it's the masterpiece, right? The creation is for the human person.
Right.
But you see that the opposite there with the Enuma Elish, mm-hmm, the human being is created to tend, right, because the gods, you know, after all, we struggled for eons and eons and eons to bring order out of chaos, and we're not going to work now that it's all done, right?
That's
so
right.
We have that beautiful, verse in the Enuma Elish. So they created the human race, by the way, from the blood of another conquered god, okay, so that the gods could go free, mm-hmm, right? So these are the ideas that I wanted to explore. And to show why Judeo-Christian religion matters and makes a difference.
You think about those narratives, and even as you're talking, it's very clear that, and we're highlighting in this case a Babylonian narrative. The version of gods, right, are basically glorified, or, and even that's using the term loosely, fallen human beings.
Yes. Yes.
Which stands in stark contradiction, you highlight this, to the good God of the Jews.
Right.
So, and you flesh that out beautifully. So just go ahead and tell us about that.
Well, and I quote a very highly respected, he's deceased now, of course, John L. McKenzie, the Jesuit Old Testament biblical scholar.
Mm-hmm.
In his book, The Two-Edged Sword, where he really does make beautiful comparisons between the ancient framework and what's happening in the Old Testament,
right,
regarding how Yahweh is so different from these pagan gods.
Right.
So,
my guest, Dr. Monica Miller, Director of Citizens for Pro-Life Society. We're talking about her new book, In the Beginning, published by Catholic Answers Press. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter for Cresta in the Afternoon.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
This program brought to you in part by the town of Ave Maria, Florida.
Ave Maria, a big kind, a small town. A golf cart-friendly, ride-your-bike-everywhere kind of town with something for everyone. Resort-style amenities, two golf courses, shopping, and dining in our town center. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at the core of the community and a wide range of homes to meet your family's needs. Visitors are welcome. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. Ave Maria, a big kind, a small town.
Father Benedict Rochelle.
There are legitimate differences of opinion in any religion. There are differences of opinion in Catholicism. But in Catholicism, you expect that people will take the teaching of its supreme authority seriously. To go diametrically opposed to those teachings is to not be a Catholic. Someone in the name of Catholicism is sponsoring the destruction of human life. Lives of unborn children. And he got the name Catholic on the door. The highest authority in Catholicism and the encyclical Humanae Vitae, Evangelium Vitae, is absolutely clear that no Catholic can support abortion and that Catholics are responsible to take serious action against legalized abortion.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
When are the most important times to celebrate the liturgy? According to the Catholic Catechism, Holy Mother Church has decreed that there are certain days throughout the year when the saving work of Christ should be commemorated. The Lord's Resurrection is celebrated once a week on Sunday, the Lord's Day. Once a year, it is also celebrated along with His Passion at Easter. Easter is considered by the Church to be the most solemn of all feasts. During the course of the year, the Church's liturgy unfolds the whole mystery of Christ, and it is made present to the faithful in every age. When the Church celebrates the mystery of Christ, there is a word that marks her prayer. The word is today, echoing the prayer taught by the Lord. It is also synonymous with the call of the Holy Spirit. This today, in God's time, always makes present the hour of Jesus' Passover, which reaches across and underlies all history. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. My guest, Dr. Monica Miller, Director of Citizens for a Pro-Life Society, systematic theologian par excellence, and the author of this new book published by Catholic Answers Press, In the Beginning, Crucial Lessons for Our World from the First Three Chapters of Genesis. So, Monica, when we left off, we were talking about how you tackle the Judeo-Christian narrative as so starkly unique compared to every other cosmogonical narrative that exists, including even the way the gods are portrayed. You go through great lengths to show how this creation is the result of a benevolent God,
right,
in Judeo-Christianity. Now, here's the deal. We're Christians. We hear this. We take that for granted because we know that for all this time. But that's actually news.
Yeah, that is, yes, absolutely correct. It's news that, first of all, the affirmation that we have in Genesis chapter 1 that the created order is good, mm-hmm, is already a revolution.
Right.
Okay. And maybe we do, I'm going to go off on another tangent in a second, but maybe we do have traditionally, and let me put it in that context, have taken for granted creation is good. Okay. But you know what? I think that we're getting away from that idea, that belief, that truth now. I mean, right now. Mm. I treat the issue, for example, of transgenderism.
Right.
Okay. And where am I going with that? The idea, really, the modern idea now is that the created order has no inherent ontological truth in it.
Right.
And so we're back into that dualist Gnostic, yeah, framework, that my identity as a self is only my mind, my soul, mm-hmm, my spirit, the invisible me.
Right.
And I have to then grab a hold of nature and alter it, shape it, manipulate it, and frankly, in transgenderism, mutilate it, mm-hmm, in order to force mere biological chemicals, okay, to fit my mind. So that is so contrary,
yeah,
okay, to the meaning of, first of all, what it means to be human and the created order itself.
Right.
Maybe I could mention, I do have an article that's published today in Catholic World Report. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw it or not, but I decided I was going to weigh in, if you will, on the new declaration from the Dicastery, uh-huh, for the Doctrine of the Faith, Dignitas
Infinita, yeah,
Infinita, that has received a lot of criticism because of its the section it has on gender theory and
that's
gender,
right,
ideology,
right.
And I wrote my response, okay, my response to the critics, mm-hmm, okay. I had to wade through a lot of articles critical of that particular section, mm-hmm, in the declaration, and it's just incredible. They have no arguments.
Yeah.
There's no biblical arguments. There's no doctrinal arguments. There's no theological arguments. There's nothing from divine revelation. It's all experience, how I feel, mm-hmm, about my gender,
right,
okay, and the church is failing to dialogue with me, and all of that. Well, the church is saying that your gender has an ontological beauty, and I argue in my article that, as I said, was published today, that gender is sacramental.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you are worshiping God, all right, because the covenant of redemption is a nuptially ordered covenant.
That's right.
Okay, and marriage, being male and female, and being in a one flesh unity, is the way in which that the covenant between God and the world is expressed.
Yep.
So your gender has a transcendent sacramental meaning, given, as my book says, in the beginning.
I see what you did there.
Okay. And so a meaning, you know, again, what am I trying to do in the book is not only just show how Judeo-Christian principles revolutionized the ancient world and its dualist pessimism, but is also the corrective, the anecdote to our current modern pessimism.
Right.
Regarding gender and marriage and the life issues and the meaning of the planet itself. Because I treat, you know, I talk about, I guess you could call it ecology if you want to go there. But, you know, what is the meaning of dominion over nature? Okay. I do think there's been some problems in that direction, which, again, Genesis chapter 1 is the corrective.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. And even as you're talking, I'm realizing my mind is going back to those great thinkers, I say this in inverted commas, that resulted in this kind of dualist pessimism we're seeing resurge in the modern sphere. You think about the French Enlightenment people, right? Mm-hmm. So you turn to the left and you're seeing Kant and Descartes.
Right.
Turn to the right, you see Rousseau and Foucault and Diderot. And so all of these people have put forth this, my real self is interior and the
I think, therefore I am.
Right. And but you're right in saying this. All of them, by themselves, but also their work, resulted in a truly pessimistic worldview.
Yes.
And the Judeo-Christian, as you write, the Judeo-Christian framework and lens, the paradigm of the creation narrative in the scriptures is not only the remedy and the antidote, but also the prescription for how it's supposed to be viewed to begin with.
Exactly. I'm hoping I'm making a contribution. And there's a lot of things that's kind of fun. I mean, it's fun to read Plotinus, for example, and I insisted with God bless the editor, but I insisted that we let them speak, let them say what they believe in their own language with their own jargon, the way that they put things. Because the reader needs to hear that,
right?
You know, and it was important for me to then apply those Judeo-Christian principles that we find in Genesis chapters 1, 2, and 3 again to the modern isms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for I have a section, for example, on radical feminism.
That's right.
Okay. Which is basically a warmed over Gnosticism.
Yep.
Make everything the same,
yep,
and then we'll be home free. Okay, mm-hmm. What's the problem with the world? There is difference and distinctions,
right,
and they are our enemy.
Right.
Right? So, yeah, so that's what I'm trying to do.
Just to put a tangential pin on this, it's funny that feminists now are angered that men identifying as women are flourishing in fields that were created for women, when in reality that was the premise of feminism to begin with.
Yeah.
If there really is complete equality between men and women, then there should be no disparate fields. But the difference is what makes us whole. The difference is what gives us this beautiful complementarity. So you argue this from the level of the intellectual tradition, but you also take great pains here to engage natural law, which,
okay,
as you and I can acknowledge, has been cast out the window.
In fact, I make a statement in the book that our primary problem in the modern world right now is a denial of natural law. If once we get back there, so many things will be solved, will be healed. I mean, natural law is the backbone of Catholic moral theology.
Yep.
But it was also the foundation for the morality even of those who were without divine revelation.
Yep.
As we see in St. Paul's letter to the Romans chapter 1 and chapter 2.
Yep.
That we could know the mysteries of God. What a thing to say. We could know the mysteries of God through the world that he has made.
And therefore they are without excuse.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. We didn't have the Ten Commandments, so we're off the hook.
If only it were that easy.
Right.
No, we expected to utilize our reason to engage the gift of this law that has come from the divine mind into our own soul. Something in the human person recognizes this law, and we're supposed to engage our reason.
Well, that's why I spend some pages diffusing, if you will, disseminating the teachings of Thomas Aquinas,
right,
and his teaching on natural law.
Yeah, which I found beautiful. I truly found very affirming, especially to see that kind of systematic theological framework applied to the beauty of Scripture, that and seeing it being fleshed out and brought to life that way. So again, I want to encourage all of you listeners, as you're listening, please do procure a copy of In the Beginning by Dr. Monica Miller. The subtitle is Crucial Lessons for Our World from the First Three Chapters of Genesis. Now, I want to put a neat little bow on our discussion here by asking you to talk about why it's necessary to celebrate. You have a section, Celebrating the Differences.
Mm.
And that's a necessary thing we've lost in the public sphere.
Well, maybe it's, and somewhat ironically, we know who we are in relationship to the difference.
Mm.
And even the difference is already there in God. The Father is not the Son. The Son is not the Father. The Holy Spirit is not the Son. Yet they are in the most perfect unity.
Yep.
And so that truth is the foundation of our world.
Right.
And I hammered home a point with my students when I taught Introduction to Catholicism. I had a lecture on the Trinity, of course, and I quote Joseph Ratzinger, mm-hmm. okay, Benedict XVI, but when he was just Joseph Ratzinger, he wrote this fantastic book, Introduction.
Was he ever just anything?
Right. Thank you. He wrote Introduction to Christianity. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a great book. Reality is not radical unity on one side,
mm-hmm.
which was, by the way, the primary value of the ancient world.
Right.
Okay, unity, oneness, the singularity mm-hmm. of the deity, okay, that has to exhaust everything and abolish difference and distinctions, okay? And then on the other side is radical individualism, where there is no inherent unity among mm-hmm. among people, even, and you can say, you know, Jean-Paul Sartre, you know, and Nietzsche would have been, you know, of that kind of yep. worldview. What really then is the ground of reality is relation, being in relation.
Mm-hmm.
You can put hyphens between those words.
Right.
Right. Being in relation. And once you step away from that, you fall into error, maybe even heresies as a consequence of because that's what's going on in the Trinity,
that's
being
right.
in relation.
Yep.
So.
Right. Well, thank you, Monica. That was a truly profound way to end this discussion today. I've been talking to Dr. Monica Miller, who's been my guest for these past two segments. She is the director of Citizens for a Pro-Life Society. She is a systematic theologian and the author of In the Beginning, Crucial Lessons for Our World, from the First Three Chapters of Genesis, published by Catholic Answers Press. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter for Cresta in the Afternoon.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
We are the pro-life generation, passionate about building the culture of life in our healthcare and in our nation. But not all healthcare options are equally pro-life, and some provide morally objectionable procedures. CMF Curo is different. CMF Curo is a pro-life Catholic healthcare ministry providing a pathway for its members to build the culture of life in their healthcare choices not destroy it. Learn more about CMF Curo at MyCatholicHealthCare.com. That's MyCatholicHealthCare.com.
Acton University is not your typical conference. Taking place from June 24th to 27th in beautiful Grand Rapids, Michigan, each day is packed with thought-provoking presentations on the intellectual and practical foundations of a free society. Bringing together world leaders in business, academia, and the church, Acton University is a conference dedicated to connecting moral and religious principles to economic and personal liberty. More information at university.acton.org.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon, rounding off the second hour of today's program. My guest earlier was Dr. Monica Miller, whose book, In the Beginning, Crucial Lessons for Our World from the First Three Chapters of Genesis. And we talked about some profound truths to be found in Genesis chapters 1, 2, and 3. Now, before we end this hour, I want to bring to your attention, in case you missed it, we have some updates on Al Cresta and how he's doing and his health. So if you missed the beginning of this hour, you can go online at avemariaradio.net and there will be a slider called News and Updates on Al Cresta. And if you click it, it takes you to a landing page, a landing page that his family has set up that allows you to find out exactly how he's doing, and you can send him well wishes and prayers and encouragement on the website. Until next time, I'm Marcus Peter for Cresta in the Afternoon.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's A-V-E-M-A-R-I-A Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.